Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
From the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Tuesday, April 15th. I'm Abby Larico. This fall's incoming class of college students is expected to be the largest ever, followed by a dramatic drop-off in upcoming years.
With a 17% decline in the number of young people having been born, we would have to see an increase in matriculation rate that's frankly not realistic.
The financial impact of the looming enrollment cliff for Missouri colleges and universities. That's coming up after this news on The Gateway. The president of the St. Louis Board of Aldermen has filed a federal lawsuit to block parts of a new law handing oversight of the city's police department to the state. Megan Green's suit challenges sections of the new law that prohibit officers of the city like herself from, quote, impeding, obstructing, hindering, or interfering with the governor-appointed board. She's also challenging another section requiring the city to spend a percentage of its budget on the department, contending it's an unfunded mandate that runs afoul of the state constitution. Green said in a statement that the suit intends to protect city officials' First Amendment rights and the city's financial future. Missouri Governor Mike Kehoe's office declined to comment, citing pending litigation. The governor is slated to appoint members to the board later this year. St. Louis Mayor-elect Kara Spencer is set to be sworn in this afternoon. As STLPR's Jason Rosenbaum reports, Spencer spent most of her last day before taking office saying goodbye to her aldermanic colleagues.
Spencer spent about a decade on the Board of Aldermen, representing portions of southeastern and eastern St. Louis. While she prevailed last week in a landslide, some of the board is still loyal to outgoing Mayor Tashara Jones. Spencer says she's hoping that the city's executive and legislative branches are aligned to tackle St. Louis's major problems.
I want to make sure that we're lockstep with the legislative branch as we consider big initiatives like the RAM settlement funds, charter reform, city managers, those big things that we're talking about moving our city forward with.
A special election for Spencer's 8th Ward seat is slated for later this year. I'm Jason Rosenbaum, St. Louis Public Radio.
Missouri lawmakers passed a bill yesterday limiting how much courts can intervene related to ballot language written by the legislature. Currently, language on proposed statute changes or constitutional amendments written and passed by the legislature can be rewritten by courts during litigation. Under proposed legislation, if the court finds the ballot language to be unfair, the court can provide suggested changes, but it is the Secretary of State's office that would prepare the new summary. The Secretary of State would have three chances to write a summary before the court could submit its version. Republican Representative Ben Keithley presented the bill on the House floor.
We're all duly elected office holders. We have a constitutional duty and job to do to send that ballot language through. The courts are only there to call the balls and strikes on it.
The bill now goes to Governor Kehoe. It's been a relatively quiet 4 months at the Illinois State House until this past week when lawmakers passed several large measures out of their originating chambers, the House or the Senate. Mawa Iqbal reports.
Illinois legislators had until last Friday to vote on bills three times before sending them over to the other chamber, completing one half of the journey to get to the governor. State senators approved plans to protect a large water reserve in central Illinois from carbon dioxide storage projects, as well as a bill that would nix a requirement for drivers to store their weed in an odor-proof container. Over at the House, lawmakers supported a measure banning public schools from using mascots that discriminate against people with disabilities. But they did not pass a hotly debated proposal that would require parents to register their kids who are homeschooled with their local school. I'm Mawa Iqbal.
In a visit to the Metro East Monday, U.S. Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois called the Trump administration's cuts to an agriculture program connecting farmers to food banks a mistake. As STLPR's Will Bauer reports, that decision has already had consequences for an East St. Louis food pantry.
The Leslie Bates Davis Neighborhood House's food pantry serves roughly 1,000 people each week. In March, the U.S. Department of Agriculture cut the local food purchase assistance program. Before it was eliminated, the Metro East Food Bank got 12 or 13 pallets of produce each week. Now it's 4 or 5. With current economic conditions, Durbin says he's concerned.
The whole situation that we face now is worrisome because families have been concerned about the cost of eggs and food at the grocery store. It hasn't gotten any better under this president. It's going to get worse if we face a recession.
The leaders of the food pantry say they'll always have food to give. Their shelves may just be more barren. In East St. Louis, I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture is also canceling the Partnerships for Climate Smart Commodities project. The $3 billion initiative funded agriculture research and programs across the nation. Over $1 billion went toward 36 programs involving Missouri. Many of these programs offered incentive payments to farmers who adopt an environmentally sustainable or climate smart practice. In an announcement yesterday afternoon, the USDA said the program funded projects that had sky-high administration fees, with, they say, little money going to farmers. Grants have gone to the MU Center for Regenerative Agriculture, the Missouri Organic Association, Lincoln University, and the University of Missouri Center for Agroforestry. The news release from the USDA states program participants will be contacted to provide information about their future participation. The Environmental Protection Agency says it is speeding up plans to clean up radioactive waste in St. Louis by 2 years. EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin visited sites with radioactive waste in the St. Louis region last month, including Coldwater Creek and the Westlake Landfill. The agency announced yesterday that it will start excavation for cleanup at the Westlake site in 2027 rather than 2029. The Westlake Landfill is a Superfund site. Contamination from uranium ore processing was brought to the landfill in the 1970s. The U.S. economy had a solid start to the year, posting modest growth in the first quarter and inflation readings below 3%. But St. Louis Public Radio's Eric Schmid reports the Trump administration's tariffs threaten to upend it.
The back-and-forth tariff policy has introduced lots of uncertainty to the economy, making any predictions quite challenging. That was evident in the economic outlook Federal Reserve Board of Governors member Christopher Waller delivered to the Chartered Financial Analyst Society St. Louis on Monday. Waller presented two possible scenarios, the effective tariff rate remaining at 25% or quickly falling to 10%.
The fact that there is still an increase in tariffs means that the smaller tariff scenario would still have a negative effect on output and employment growth, but much smaller than the larger tariff scenario.
Waller says the new tariffs will push inflation higher in the short term, but it likely won't last since they're considered one-time price increases. I'm Eric Schmid, St. Louis Public Radio.
The number of students heading to college this fall is projected to be the biggest ever, before declining precipitously in the years after. For some schools, that's more than just a demographic concern. Amina Jenkins reports the financial impact is putting some Missouri institutions at risk.
The term enrollment cliff has been around in higher education circles for more than a decade.
The phrase enrollment cliff just refers to the idea that we've anticipated a decline in the number of young people headed to college because there's been a decline in the number of births.
That's Nathan Graw, professor of economics at Carleton College and the person who coined the term. He says a decline in birth rates means the potential pool of college applicants is shrinking.
With a 17% decline in the number of young people having been born, we would have to see an increase in matriculation rate that's frankly not realistic.
This reality presents unique financial challenges for schools. If they can't recruit enough students, some Missouri schools face significant cuts or closure.
An end of an era in higher education in St. Louis. After more than 100 years, Fontbonne University will be closing its doors in the summer of 2025.
Last March, Fontbonne University leaders announced the school would close amid budget shortfalls brought on by a more than 70% drop in enrollment in the last 15 years. The Scholarship Foundation of St. Louis published a watch list of schools that could potentially end up in similar positions. The foundation evaluated the financial health of institutions using scores from the U.S. Department of Education and the Forbes College Financial Health Score. Of the 35 schools listed, 14 are in Missouri. Roughly a third of Missouri schools on the list are listed as having significant financial struggles. Faith Sandler is the organization's executive director. She says the foundation wanted to better inform students of their options after seeing how students were impacted by abrupt closures like Fontbonne's.
Once the impending closure is announced, for students who especially are the first in their families to take this step, it's very difficult to regroup.
The list says some schools may use, quote, aggressive marketing and selective messaging, including announcements about admitting their largest freshman class or starting new programs. William Woods University in Fulton says this year's freshman class is its largest ever, but it made the foundation's list. William Woods University received the lowest score a school can get and still be considered financially responsible. John Fougere is the school's vice president of strategic communications. He says the score speaks more to the conditions of the last few years than the school's viability.
We did see a dip in enrollment, certainly around 2020, when COVID-19 happened. All you have to do is look around the country right now, and there are a number of small private colleges over the past, 5 to 10 years, even before COVID-19 came along, that are actually having to close their doors.
Both Sandler and Fougere agree the pandemic was a huge blow to institutions, especially smaller private ones. Sandler says COVID-19 relief funds helped support schools that were struggling financially.
We saw a financial cliff for a number of colleges and universities who were already in trouble, but had that trouble abated a bit thanks to relief funds.
Fougere says William Woods University has been preparing for the financial impact of the enrollment cliff with what the school calls its, quote, professions-oriented approach.
We are constantly looking at our programs to make sure we are offering academic opportunities that provide graduates who are in demand by today's employers.
Still, Nathan Gross says schools have to be proactive and consistent to avoid issues.
If we were to see colleges and universities do better in the way of retention and persistence to degree, enrollments might be supported, even though the number of young people going to college through the front door is falling.
I'm Amina Jenkins.
That story comes to us from member station KBIA in Columbia. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Abby Larico, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, this has been The Gateway.